Welcome to Burning the Ships, and I'm your host, Jason Seward, and today I'm excited to share with y'all the brains behind this podcast when it comes to all things editing and production and stuff like that, and that is my good buddy, Josh Culler. Josh is, before I get into introducing Josh, let me give y'all JJ's joke of the week, and pulling it up here. Okay, why don't cows ever have any money? This is silly. Because farmers milk them dry. Okay, JJ. That's JJ's joke of the week. He's going to have to step it up. I don't like that one very much. Anyway, Josh Culler. Josh is, he is the owner, operator of Culler Media. He's got a lot of stuff going on. He does social media, management for brands and companies. He does podcast management, production, editing. He can do all of that, all things kind of marketing and whatnot. He'll get into his business when he hops on, here in a little bit, but kind of give y'all a little bit of backstory, because Josh is a great example of someone being consistent on, and we talk about it in the episode, but being consistent on social media and as a marketing effort, and then that paying dividends. And I am a great example, or he's a great example of doing that, and I'm a great example of somebody that ultimately reached out for his services because of the stuff I was seeing on social media. So Josh and I there was no referrals or anything like that. I had no idea who he was. He had no idea who we were. We had never connected. He had never reached out to me, and vice versa. But every once in a while, as I would scroll through Instagram or Facebook, I kept seeing different reels of him talking about, you know, podcast and YouTube and strategies of, you know, all these things. And I remember telling, you know, Tim and Bill's, like, eventually when we get to a point where we probably need to turn this over to somebody that can manage it a little bit more professionally to take it off our plate. So fast forward towards like the beginning of this year, we decided to reach out to someone, and the first person I reached out to was the person I was seeing in my reels over and over and over, Josh. So I reached out to him. Long story short, we ended up doing business together, and now he manages all of our podcast production, all the stuff. You probably noticed, if you've been listening since the beginning, things kind of quickly got a lot better produced. The audio became better. The video became better. He added, you know, some variables and details to the podcast. It just made it overall more appealing, and hopefully, you know, as we continue to go, grows our audience in a more efficient way and stuff like that. So I wanted to invite Josh on to kind of talk all things that, like, how he's been so successful marketing himself over the years and building this brand, and kind of his story of how he evolved into that. He's young, and he'll talk about in the episode, but he's an entrepreneur. Like, he has been a hustler since the beginning, and he's a great testimony of just figuring out, like, where you can add value in this world and then designing a business around that, right? If you give enough value, people will pay you for that value, and you have something to build upon, right? And so he recognized things that he was very good at. He has pivoted a couple times, in the middle of kind of pivoting now to restructure some things in his business. But I had a great time sitting down with Josh, my buddy from Chicago Bulls fan, although he said that LeBron James is his, you'll hear it in the interview, but is his favorite player of all time. But he says that while he's got Jordan and Chicago Bull posters and hats everywhere and stuff like that. So I had to bite my tongue on that one, Josh. But I agree, LeBron is very good, but Jordan will always be the GOAT in my eyes. So enough of that. Let's turn it over to my conversation with Josh Culler, and we will talk to you guys next time. Take it away, Josh. Welcome to Burning the Ships podcast, and today I got my man, Josh Culler. How you doing, buddy?
Jason, I am excited to be on here, man. I obviously listen to the show every single episode. There's no reason why, which you'll probably talk about, but
exactly.
You've had some amazing guests on the show, and I'm honored to be here with you. So excited.
Yeah, I'm excited to have you, and I touched on it in the intro, but again, Josh does all of our podcast editing, production, things like that. I get the fun job of just sitting here talking to people and rambling and doing all that, and then Josh is the one behind the scenes, him and his team. If for anybody that's been following this show since the beginning, you clearly saw an improvement in sound and quality, you know, several months ago, and that is at the hands of Josh. So Josh runs Color Media, has a bunch of other things we'll get into going on as well, but I'm glad to have you here. And Josh, like I do with everybody, I'm going to kick it off. I'm going to turn it over to you and just tell the folks who you are, what you have going on, and piece all that together however you want, and then I'll tee up some questions after that.
Yeah, for sure. No, I appreciate, you and Tim both are just incredible people to work with. I love the feedback that you give. Funny enough, I was just having a conversation with another client of mine, and I'm like, there's some people that like, they're just super enjoyable to work with because they're just very respectful people. Right. And generally speaking, like when it comes to business, like how you are as a person translates over to how you run a business and work with you know, vendors and other, you know, third party people that you're going to work with. And you guys are just incredible to work with. So it makes managing the podcast a little bit more enjoyable and a little bit more fun. So that's good.
Yeah. We try to make it easy for you in the sense that, I mean, you know how I roll. It's not much editing in the middle of episodes. So we turn you over, hopefully a decent product, and then you just make it sound and look good. So, and you do a good job with that. So.
I appreciate that. But yeah, I've been in the real estate investing business in the industry for going on 13 years now. So it's been quite some time. I am only 31 years old, so I got into it right out of high school and worked with a local wholesaling company, ran their marketing for years. And this is way back in a different time period of wholesaling when, you know, we weren't doing cold calling, we weren't doing text blasting, we were doing just the basic stuff.
Right.
A lot of the marketing we were doing too was to build buyers lists and build relationships with other people in our market and that sort of thing. So I focus specifically in the real estate investing space, which is how I came across Jason, of course, he being in the space as well. And we work with a whole slew of people within the space. We work with people that are in storage investing, wholesaling, mostly a lot of coaches and a lot of mentors, people that got, you know, some sort of education program and that sort of thing. But we also work with active investors. But I focus on three things, all in the organic spaces: podcast management production, YouTube management production, and social media management and production. So ultimately, the model is, like Jason's talked about, if he's going to have us manage the podcast, he records the episodes, and then we do everything after that, from audio editing, video editing, everything that goes into that, you know, show noting, any graphics that need to be developed, that sort of thing, and then the publishing. And so he can just sit back, record the episodes, and know that everything's going to go out super high quality and on time. And so it's the same thing for YouTube management, same thing for social media management. And that's ultimately what we got going on. It's pretty simple and cut.
Yeah. So let's go back a little bit. You said pretty much right out of high school, you jumped in the real estate space. What led you to that over other options?
Oh man, there's a very, very long story. So I'll cut it short and sweet, but I was working right out of high school. I just knew that I wasn't going to be going to college at all. This was kind of prior to the years that, you know, entrepreneurship kind of became a really cool thing with young people. I just knew I was not good in school. I knew for a fact that it wasn't, you know, me in a way. It's just kind of the system. Like, I was just that person. So I just knew immediately I was not going to be going to college. I wanted to go directly into the workforce. I just didn't kind of know what I want, but I knew it was somewhere in the creative space. That being said, just to make sure that I, you know, had some form of income coming in, I immediately got a couple jobs here and there. The one that I ended up at was a forklift driving job in downtown Chicago. And then I get a, there was a whole bunch of things that had happened in personal life. And I kind of wanted to take a trip to Colorado to get away from a bunch of things. So I asked off from that job and the manager said no. So I was fed up with it. There was a lot of things that had happened there. And I was like, done with it. So I called my buddy who his dad actually owned a bunch of real estates in our market, Northwest Indiana, Chicagoland area. And I called him and I was like, hey, is your dad hiring anybody? And he's like, well, we don't really know what we'd be hiring for, but, you know, we could talk. So I worked with them for about 6 months and did bandit signs, pre-looked houses, you know, did back then Craigslist postings, like all kinds of stuff, literally almost everything that's just kind of in between taking pictures of houses, going to look at properties that, you know, this is back when, you know, you'd acquire properties from HUD and auction.com, MLS and that sort of thing.
What year were you? You're talking what, early, like 2010, 12?
No, this would have been 2012, 2013.
Okay, yeah. Got it.
So going into that time period. And then I worked with them for about 6 months. I wanted to shift in that and worked for my good buddy, Gary Harper, who a lot of people in the real estate investing space knows who he is, does business systems and processes and that sort of thing. And so he was partners with a couple guys in the Midwest that had a much larger wholesaling company that were in five different states out here in the Midwest. And so I ultimately worked with them. We did. Gary and I were in charge of wholesaling in Michigan and Ohio, and we did it all virtually. This is before, not saying that we created virtual wholesaling, this is before it became a thing. And we just found out how to do it. And I think the first year we were together, we did about 40 deals or so without seeing a single property and wholesaling all of those. And so I kind of got moved into the marketing seat of that company for about 6 years. We had started a mastermind together. The company kind of got really big and then parted ways. I actually went to run that mastermind that we had started for about a year and a half, 2 years, all the while doing what I'm doing now as kind of a side hustle. Then at that point, kind of this is going towards like 2018-ish, you know, that whole year, that side hustle kind of eclipsed what I was doing in the full-time job, right?
Yeah.
And so then that one thing led to another, then went full-time into what I'm doing now in March of 2019.
You know what we call that, Josh? That's burning the ships.
That is burning the ships. Yes, I was leading to that.
Yeah. So
sorry.
2019, that's when you leaned into, I guess, predominantly what you're doing now. So social media, YouTube, podcasts, things like that. So I guess a year later, COVID hits. What kind of impact did that have on your growing business at that time? Or what kind of fear did you have going through that?
Yeah, it was a little scary. You know, I've thought about that a lot actually recently too, because I'm not going to lie, and we could talk about this too for sure. I'll be vulnerable. Like, I'm in a season right now where business really sucks. Like, mm-hmm. it's really hard to come by. We're struggling a little bit. And there's a lot of lessons that come away from that. But back then, it was different because it was almost a naive thing. Like, I wasn't kind of understanding what I was going into when COVID was hitting. At the time, I was actually doing a lot of travel video. So I was actually going out to clients, shooting videos with them on site for a full day. I had this package. I still do it to this day. But back then, that was like 2 to 3 times a week I was on a plane visiting somebody.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Very frequent. So we would, you know, I would film the content, come back, give it to my team. They would edit it and do everything that we're supposed to do with it. And so when COVID hit, I remember I was actually in San Antonio, Texas with a client. And we were, Gabby, my wife, was actually with me there because we're good friends, personal friends with the client as well. So we were just hanging out for a little bit. And we were coming back on the plane. And I remember sitting in the airport. This is like the first week of February and first seeing what was going on with COVID.
Right.
And I was like, kind of like aware of what was going on. But then I'm thinking, you know, I don't know if this is going to affect me or not. And sure enough, it did. There was a little bit of a dip. Luckily, like where I live, Chicago is kind of shut down, but I live in Indiana and we didn't really shut down that much. But my clients nationally, like it was just kind of a free for all. I had clients in Florida. Florida really didn't shut down that much. So I actually drove down, like this would have been like April. I drove down and visited like 4 clients in a row. And so like I made it work. Was the thing, but a lot of it was naiveness. Like I just kind of didn't know I didn't know what to expect. You know, the business wasn't like, I didn't have a whole lot of employees and team members. I think at the time I probably had like maybe four employees with me at the time. And so that, I mean, that's a great question. It's interesting. And even if I wanted the clocks back further, what I got myself into is I actually got married in October of 2018. So then a few months later, I went full time into the business. And then a few months after that, then COVID hit. And then, you know, luckily things got back to normal pretty quickly. But during that summer of 2020, it was a little bit of struggle. But I remember it being like, it wasn't anything too crazy because I made it work. I found ways to make it happen. You know, even though driving from Chicago down to Florida was like a 2-day trip, I still made it work and made things happen. And that ultimately, that time period did push me more into working with clients more virtually. So that did shift the business a little bit.
Yeah, let's stay here for a minute because I'm always curious, like on the mindset side of it. So you just mentioned you made it work, you figured it out. Is that a learned trait from you, or is that just something? Does it go back to childhood? Like when you face adversity, do you just based off that little story you just told, it was a big story for your life, but that short period, you faced some adversity. It sounds like you didn't sulk in it very long, and you just figured it out. And you know, pushed your way through it. Is that natural to you, or is that something you've had to build through time and adversity?
Yeah, you know, every once in a while I'll go on a podcast or be interviewed by somebody and they're like, what's your superpower? And naturally, the first thing I think of is I think I'm a problem solver. And if you look at my predictive index testing too, like that, it shows that like I'm a very quick problem solver. I'm not a super deep thinker. Like, I'm not going to spend like days trying to, you know, create a plan. Like, I'll have an idea pop on my head and then I'll just like run with it and trust my gut.
Yeah.
So I think that it is a natural thing, but I do think that it can be learned for sure. But you know, for me growing up too, like I was definitely a problem solver. You remember many times where I had to kind of just use my head and just make a quick decision. And I think that's where a lot of it comes from too, is I am the type of person where I'll make a quick decision. And if it's the wrong decision, I'm kind of okay with it. You know what I mean? Like there's a few things that have happened in my business where I've had to make decisions quick on my feet and they were the wrong decision. And it came back and bit me in the butt later on, but you know what? I keep going. And I think that's where a lot of people get stuck to, especially the very logical thinking people. Is that they try to spend too much time on solving a problem, not trusting their gut. And now that I'm a seasoned business owner, you know, I've been in business for 6 years now, I not only have like confidence in my gut when I make decisions, but I also have experience backing me up. So that's a big advantage that I didn't have in the story that we're talking about with 2020. So I think that problem solving is a thing that I have learned over time. And I learned that from my dad too, because my dad taught me that growing up. And, you know, I still just kind of use that all the time.
Yeah, I can definitely relate to you there. I don't like to think about a lot. I just go, you know, and I have, there's a lot of negative that comes with that, especially not so much for me because just my whole life, throw anything at me, I'm going to be okay with it and we'll figure it out. But I create a lot of chaos being this way, right? You know, so I make quick decisions. A lot of gold comes from it, but like on the fringe, there's, you know, it's not easy for folks close to me because I'm always just going to the next thing. We'll figure it out. No worries. And it's kind of always called the ready, fire, aim mentality. I just jump in and I kind of solve it. But there's a beauty to that too, right? And you're living it, right? I mean, you said y'all are kind of in a down season right now. I don't think you're laying in bed depressed over it. Like you're figuring out what next step you need to take and to get this thing ramped up. And I think it's one of the best. There's many good traits entrepreneurs can have to kind of push through everything. But in my opinion, just from my experience, observing others and living it through my own business dealings and stuff like that, that this is one of the better traits you can have. So, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And you live with it too. So like, you know, great example right now is we're in a down season. And you know, it happens in business. And I have to be you kind of have to, and I've learned this over the course of my time and from very wise mentors of mine that have kind of helped cultivate my mindset when it comes to this kind of thing, right? Like, you kind of have to have this process of thinking where you're solving problems, but you're also like, you need to take it seriously. So I respect the problems that are coming my way. So naturally, it's easy for me to think like, you know, man, this is really tough. This sucks. I get down. Like, it'll happen. There was like probably yesterday there was an hour or so where I was just kind of like mopey and just kind of like dragging through the day and not happy about things and that sort of thing. But then I got right back up. And the way I've kind of had to frame it in my mind is thinking about it from a standpoint of like, I care about this problem, but that I don't care about it enough to tie it to like the result of that problem is who I am. And I've got to make sure I detach that, because if I have a bad habit of that where, and I actually just recently learned this about myself, is I am the type of person that I tie my success and who I am as a person to the results that I've achieved. But the results are just the results of the actions that I've taken. They're not necessarily the person that I am. And so I have to be, you know, kind of aware and conscious of that. But a lot of the like dealing with problems and making decisions and moving forward and that sort of thing, it almost comes from a standpoint of like, I hate to say, I'll preface it with this. Like, I hate to say I don't care, but some of the things that come my way, I have to look at them and say like, you know, I don't really care, but I'm going to make smart decisions on these things.
Yeah.
And that completely, having that attitude completely detaches any emotions, because I'm an emotional person too, mm-hmm. right? Like, I'm a very competitive spirit. Like, I grew up playing sports all year round, and that can creep in to make it almost like I'm a baby sometimes, right? Like, I'm a sore loser, and I don't like having that. You can't have that kind of mentality in business. And like you said, there's pros and cons to having, you know, that type of personality on both ends. But from a standpoint, I have to look at it like, you know what, that happened. Okay, cool. It happened. I'll step back. Let me make some decisions on this and come back to it later. Like, I really have to have kind of like a, almost like a careless mentality to it, because that allows me to detach my emotions, go to the logical side of thinking, and start using my experience and my gut to solve the problems. So,
yeah.
And this is all stuff, by the way, that I've kind of like within the last 8 to 10 months have kind of run into for myself. Yeah.
I love it. I mean, number one, you're aware enough to constantly try to learn yourself, right? We're always like, if any human is trying to do this world and do this life the right way, you're trying to be a learner. But a lot of people lose sight. Like, you, till the day you die, you need to be learning about yourself, right? Yeah. And trying to like internally figure some things out. And you nailed it a few minutes ago, talking about like disconnecting who you are from the results that you get. It was probably one of my biggest flaws. I would connect everything to wins and losses in my corporate career. I was in a sales career. If I'd have a big month or a big year, I was strutting around every meeting I could. You know, I wanted people to know, here I am. But I'd have a couple down periods where I didn't want to show up to the meetings, right?
Yeah.
So I was connecting who I am to the results. And it took a while, like you're talking about. I had to really dig deep and like, man, I am who I am. Like, whether I win or lose, everybody knows I'm trying, right? Whatever it is I'm doing, I'm putting in effort. And it doesn't matter whatever others think of the results. I am who I am, and I can't be defined by that. So I love the way you put that. I want to make sure, because I don't want to forget to touch on this, because it's something that is like, I'm in a bunch of mastermind groups, a bunch of networking groups, and one struggle which I have had as well, I'm kind of over it now and I'm rolling forward, but one struggle that a lot of new entrepreneurs have, not just new folks that have been doing it a while, but they're trying to figure out new ways to market, is social media, right? And I'm going to use you as an example to kind of illustrate, and then I want you to talk about it. But a lot of people will test out marketing on social media. So they'll either work with somebody like you or another marketing company to help them create content, put stuff out there daily, and they're measuring results by the number of likes, engagements, things like that. And those are key metrics, but if those numbers aren't growing at the rate that they think or expect them to, they don't think their content or their efforts are having any or providing any value or getting any results. So I'm gonna use your example. For I'd say at least 3, maybe 4 or 5 months, every time I opened up Facebook, a reel of you was popping. I'd never heard of you, didn't know you at all, didn't know you, but whatever the algorithms were doing, it was feeding you to my reels. So I'd watch them. I never liked them. I never commented, and I never shared them. But fast forward to like towards the end of last year, my business partners and I were saying we need to offload producing this podcast. Like it's we don't know what we're doing. We need to get a professional to do it. You were the first person I called because you were popping up in my reels. So your consistent daily activity of posting, you got no engagement from me, but you were top of mind because you were there all the time. So speak to the power of that, because a lot of people give up before those calls and results start coming. So.
Yeah, and the problem that you run into with this is, so I'm gonna give some like principles that I kind of teach when I'm
Okay.
walking people through this kind of stuff. But the problem, and almost we just talked about it from a personal standpoint, is tying like who we are to the results that like are showing up on a piece of paper or something like that. And social media is very similar in this sense. And I'll give an example here in just a second of like the differences between it. But I think ultimately, I teach about, I'm going to hit you with a few things. So first
Perfect.
of all, one of the things that I teach about when I go to like different masterminds and that sort of thing, and if I'm giving presentations, is the three reasons why any type of marketing fails. And the number one reason is expectations. So it's expectations, personnel, and direction. So expectations are basically like, do you have the proper expectations on what you're putting this podcast out for, or what you're putting this social media content out for, or why you're running this direct mail campaign, or why you're running these Facebook ads? Because the problem that a lot of people run into is that they get told at a mastermind that they need to put social media videos out. So they start doing it, but they don't have any kind of grounds or direction or expectations as to what they're trying to achieve with it. They might say like, and a lot of times, like I think, you know, I'll go to masterminds and people have like 20 steps and 6 different funnels that they're driving traffic to and that sort of thing. You don't have to have that kind of stuff, but there really needs to, I call it the North Star. You need to have a North Star in what you're trying to accomplish. So I'll use this very specific example that, I'm not sure. I'm sure like your audience is a little diverse in this, but let's just take, for example, a real estate investor that's trying to buy houses from motivated seller leads. So if they put out a video and let's say it goes viral from a sense and gets, you know, 500,000 views, and it gets a lot of engagement, gets a lot of viewership, a lot of comments, a lot of, you know, that sort of thing, but it didn't lead to any leads, it didn't close any deals. Was that a successful piece of content? Well, in the eyes of everybody on the outside, you're probably getting hammered from your friends and saying, like, yo, this video went viral. This is awesome. This is great. And then you're like, yeah. And it definitely feels good here. Like, you definitely got that hit. And you're thinking, like, man, this video did great. And theoretically, sure, like, the more eyeballs that you get, the higher chances you have of hitting the right person. But for the sake of example, it didn't close any deals. Then you put out another video, and let's say it got 100 views, and it closed one deal that netted you a $45,000 wholesaling profit. Was that a successful video? To the outside world, they would say, oh, Josh, your video isn't only getting 100 views or something like that. Like, you need to step it up. Let me introduce you to somebody that can make it go viral or whatever. That's the natural progression of what happens. That's the mentality that a lot of business owners have. When I know that that closed me a deal that brought a lot of money into my pocket. So I don't care. I'm so focused on this. Now, I don't want to discredit like the, and you said it, the analytics like that. We call them the vanity metrics. Those do matter. They do tell a story on what's going on. And yes, again, theoretically, the more eyeballs that you get on something, the higher chances you have of hitting the right person. But we got to make sure that we're hitting the right person in order to get the leads coming in. But there's so many things that could break in the system. You know, for example, if you're getting 100,000 views, but no leads are coming in, you're probably hitting people, but you're just not giving the proper call to actions or telling them how to, you know, come and, you know, work with you or to come contact you or what you have to offer and that sort of thing. So there's that kind of broken system that you got to piece together. But I think ultimately the mentality is putting together the content that actually is driving towards what your North Star is, what you're trying to accomplish. And again, it could just be something extremely simple. If Jason is putting out a podcast that's specifically to attract, you know, investors to work within his fund, then that's it. That is the North Star. So then we drive everything around that. So maybe it's getting guests on the show that are specifically tailored to, you know, curate that kind of audience, or maybe it's that audience specifically, and I'm getting investors on my show to trap them on a 1-hour interview and, you know, I'm marketing to them at that point and getting to know them and delivering some value. So ultimately, that's what it comes down to, is like you have to have a very keen focus on what you're trying to accomplish. Drive after that. Yes, measure those analytics, but at the same time, I would measure the analytics on the backside, like what leads are coming through. Are you actually getting conversions from it? And don't pull the plug too early. A lot of people, like I said, they'll put out content for like 30, 60 days and then they're like, didn't do anything, chalk it up. I tried the social media thing, didn't work. Guys, like this stuff takes time and the algorithms, they change all the time. For example, like Instagram right now is a really tough platform for people to kind of make some headway on. YouTube Shorts, doing well for a lot of people. And that flip-flops all the time. So you kind of have to stay on top of it. But the thing that matters the most is the consistency. I was able to pull Jason as a client because I was consistent. And as soon as he needed something that I had to offer, I was the first person that came to mind. And that's kind of the mentalities that you'd work with.
Yeah. And it was very organic. I saw it. I messaged you. We went back and forth, hopped on a couple calls, and it was that you didn't oversell anything. I mean, it was a natural, organic process. And I'm very aware. Like I could tell by your reels, like he's speaking. He seems like a genuine person. This seems authentic. I like his style. I like his way he articulates very clear and concisely what you do and what you offer. I liked all that. And then I validated that to myself when I actually spent some time with you on the phone, and then that led to a relationship, right?
Yeah.
And that's how it works. And like for us, I mean, we put a lot of content out there. Number one, it wouldn't happen if I didn't have folks managing that for me. And like this podcast probably still wouldn't be going if I didn't hire someone like yourself to do all the stuff that was bogging us down and keeping us out of the thing that was really making us money, which is our lending business. But what we try to do with all of it is, I don't know how many times at this point we've had investors and borrowers contact us, kind of like I contacted you, because they saw on my personal page a cool video I put up with my kids. And they lead with, man, I love what y'all are doing. I'd love to learn more, but I can see you're a good dad, a good husband, good family man, stuff like that, right? So I'm posting real things about myself. I'm doing that with the intent to hopefully inspire some people to be a cool dad also, but also it gets the right attention on me to then hopefully lead to investors, borrowers, things like that. So, and it's hard to, I relate it to like a billboard. People put a billboard up on the interstate, right? And you might get 100 leads from that billboard and you never know it came from the billboard. You know, they just call the office one day because they see that billboard on the way. And you might not capture from them, how did you hear about us? But that billboard is working. And if somebody comes across Josh's reel and then they go to his page and they start scrolling, and all they see is just relevant things to who he is and what he offers, it creates a funnel, right?
Yep,
so, absolutely. Yeah, I think it's great. So, I could talk on this a lot because it's been an education the last 2 years for me, just learning it, because prior to leaving my corporate career, my involvement with social media was being tagged by my wife and stuff, and I would occasionally post stuff, right? And it was usually around hunting or golfing or, you know, whatever travel we were doing. But so I had to do a big pivot to market and brand my business and things like that. And it's not easy to have stuff go out there and you not get a single like. And then you're wondering, God, man, is everybody rolling their eyes at all this crap I'm putting out? And, you know, but you got to get beyond that, you know?
Yeah, so, yeah, for sure.
Right. So from let's talk, and I'm going to go one other direction here in a little bit, but I want you to kind of speak to a new entrepreneur, right? And they could, you know, whether it's in real estate, they're starting service-based business, whatever it is, doesn't matter. They have a very low budget, and they're just trying to figure out like a roadmap for the next 6 months to a year from a marketing standpoint online. What recommendation at a low cost would you give them?
That's a really good question. So the way I frame this up is there's two ways that you can market on spending something, money and time. And there's some things that you market that take both. There's some things that you market that they one or the other. And the time one, obviously, that's the hardest one because it requires your time. It requires your actions, your grit and that sort of thing. So, for example, like the podcast that Jason's running, it's both because he's spending time to actually record the episodes, but then he's spending money to have it produced and managed and that sort of thing. But when it comes down to if you're going to market your business and let's say you have a low budget, obviously, you know, getting yourself in front of the proper audience of the person that you're potentially going to work with, that's the most important thing. And a lot of times that just takes time to be able for you to kind of get in front of the right person. So what I would do is obviously like just like it is uncomfortable. I mean, Jason just talked about it. Like, you know, it's uncomfortable for you to be putting stuff out on social media and not getting any likes. Maybe your mom's the only one that's liking it and, you know, your wife's sharing it and that sort of thing. Like that kind of stuff happens, but it can seem a little like, I don't know, it's kind of like, you know, deteriorating to your ego. But at the same time, like in business, the way I kind of tell people about this, Jason, is in business, there's so many things that we do that we don't want to do and we don't like to do, but we have to do them anyway. And, you know, sometimes marketing, social media, namely, is one of those things oftentimes. And you just need to stay consistent with it. The more you put out, you know, regardless of the fact, don't be looking at like how many views you're getting on videos and that sort of thing. Just put things out that is you talking about who you are, what you do. And the way I kind of describe content as a whole, content's one of those things that like you could put content out, organic content out for free. It's just going to cost your time is really all it is. Like if you're going to have a video editor edit videos and publish and that sort of thing, I say don't start there. Like marketing is still kind of like marketing is a very like good parallel to business and in general, because marketing, you bootstrap stuff, right? So you start with like you shoot the videos yourself, you maybe edit them yourself, you put them out yourself and that sort of thing. And then at some point you raise the bar and then you have an editor go in and edit the videos and that sort of thing, right? So at first, it's all going to be you. So you download CapCut on your phone and edit the videos. You shoot the videos. You publish them and put them out. You do all that because that'll save you money. You're just going to spend time on it. Now, what I frame content marketing up, whether it's podcasting, YouTube videos, social media content, whatever it is it's literally just answering questions that your target demographic has about who you are, what you do, and your industry. It's just answering questions. So if you are in business, whether it's a service-based business, product-based business, whatever it is, you should know theoretically what a certain person is asking about your product or your service. And if you don't, then you're not talking to enough people. Obviously, like we're having the conversation, you're just starting off, so maybe you don't have all of that kind of conversation under your belt at the moment. But go discover it. Go audit the competition that you potentially have at hand. See what is being asked. And then just put that kind of content out and put it out unapologetically. Continue to pump it out, crank it out as much as you can. There's no limit. There's no like, oh, well, you post twice a day. No, like post 10 times a day if you have the capacity to do it. And granted, right now, you probably don't have the business to be able to allocate to like, you know, I'm spending time in the business right now. Like spend time in marketing because that will build the business and get you more clientele and that sort of thing. That's where I would start. So find the things that you're gonna spend time for because you have that right now. Then when the time comes and you have a little bit of budget to allocate towards spending money on marketing, then you go up from there. That's where I would start.
Yep. No, that's very good. Do you know who Mel Robbins is?
Mm-hmm.
So she has a book called Let Them, and she spent a couple chapters. I just read it. And Mel Robbins, for those that don't know, very influential woman. She's a great speaker, has a great podcast. But this book, spends a couple chapters talking exactly what you were just talking about. Talking about like her being uncomfortable down to the point like when she started converting from just posting personal stuff on social media to posting about herself as a speaker and trying to promote a brand and stuff like that, how she would be paralyzed and take hours trying to craft the perfect post, and she'd post it and it would get like 2 likes, and it was her aunt and, you know, daughter, and she'd freak out and delete it, and spent so much bandwidth on just obsessing over these little details. And it wasn't until she just said, because she was so in her head about people judging her, right? Like, oh, Mel's changed and stuff. And I think that is, just from my own experience and observations, most people are hung up on that. Like, what are my high school buddies going to think when I start all of a sudden posting it 10 times a day, right? Yeah. You got to get past that, right?
Yeah.
You got to get past it, you know? And do you see a lot of people hung up on that? They may not articulate it, but, you know.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there are people like that. But again, the thing I always tell, like I already said it, but the thing I tell people is just in business, you got to do things that you don't want to do. So suck it up and do it.
Right.
It's literally just one of those things. Get a little bit of, you know, grit and do what needs to be done. It's uncomfortable at first, but that's where we expand and grow, is in the uncomfortable stages of life. And I'm preaching to the choir right now, right? Like this is advice that I'd give myself as well. But when it comes to that kind of stuff, when it comes to social media and feeling judged and that sort of thing, like you have to get yourself unleashed from that kind of mentality, because if you continue to do that, that's just going to affect every other piece of marketing that you ever put out or do. And that just doesn't work in marketing. Marketing is one of those things that like it takes on its own life. Like sales, I would say like the personality of sales is convincing, whereas marketing is just kind of like you have to emotionally detach from it. Like it's almost like what we talked about earlier from a personal mindset. That's what marketing has to take on as a personality too, is emotionally unattach from the thoughts of any judgment or even high expectations. The problem too, and this is like general, and this is where I say like marketing and in business in general have so many parallels with each other, because like I had one of my first clients actually talks about this, that one of my longest tenure clients I've ever worked with. He's a friend of mine too. But he says, like, don't ever get too high in the highs and too low in the lows. Stay as consistent as you can. Sounds boring. Sounds like, man, what kind of life does that provide? But it really is true. And in marketing, you're going to have a lot of highs. You're going to have a lot of times where, like, that one thing that you did created so much buzz, brought in a lot of clients, brought in a lot of revenue, and then you're going to have something that absolutely tanks. You can't get too emotional about it. You're going to lose money on it, but like, don't be thinking about it from a standpoint of like, oh, I'm never going to try that again. Oftentimes in marketing, like even just social media or a podcast, oftentimes it's one little tweak that has to be made, and then that could like make that one thing like explode,
right,
and put you in front of the right people.
I can relate. I mean, not to keep bringing it back to what we're doing, but it's important to note, like when we first started pumping stuff out on social media, everybody in my hometown, every time I'd see them, God, man, I can't open up Facebook without seeing your face or a clip. And I would, like, I was ashamed of that. Like, I had this weird insecurity, and I would always respond with, oh, we hire somebody to do all that. I'm not doing that every day. Like, I was kind of detaching myself.
Yeah.
From what they were obviously seeing. And now I'd say it took me about a year, but now I own it. Like when people say that to me, good, it's working. I'm glad you're seeing me every time. Like it's working.
Yeah.
And back to your point, you just had to fight through that awkwardness and stuff like that. But want to shift gears a little bit, because I know you got another side hustle with the shoes and and things like that. Talk about that, man, because I think one of our first calls, we were talking about something. I realized like you just don't have a hobby of collecting shoes. You actually have turned that hobby into something that hopefully makes you a little bit of money. So what do you have going on with that?
Oh man, I love talking about this. I don't really talk about it that often on podcasts because it's just kind of like, it's one of those things that like, yeah, it's a side hobby.
It's fun, man.
But it's taught me a lot about, product marketing. So like, okay, so with the media services that I offer, even in like the actual real estate that I've been a part of as like a director of marketing for a wholesaling company and that sort of thing. There's not really a like the house is the product, but it's a lot more like it's not like we made the product and we're trying to. So with a service, it's so much different because we're actually like taking actions in order to receive revenue from clients. We're not marketing a product. When you have a shoe and you're marketing a product, it's a much different mentality. And in fact, there's a lot of like very similarities in the way that you run a business from wholesaling real estate to like selling sneakers. It's a very similar process. So I've been a sneakerhead my whole life, as long as I can remember, even when I was just very, very young. I got into sneakers. Like I grew up near the south side of Chicago, and sneaker culture is kind of big here and has always been. I mean, Jordan, like, you know, that was the thing. Like, and I didn't grow up in the 80s. And, you know, I was born in 93. But even in the late 90s, that's when kind of Jordan just really kind of took its stride and become the dominant brand in sneakers. So my area where I live, that's a very prominent thing. And so I've been a sneakerhead my whole life. And I've always kind of like, again, like I have a knack for just selling things. Like I like to buy stuff. Like I'll see something random at a garage sale that's not a sneaker, just like, I don't know, a TV. And I'm like, you know, I could wipe that down and then flip it and sell it. Like I have that kind of nature in me, and I enjoy doing that. So I've always done that. You know, back in the days when Craigslist was big, I sold a lot on Craigslist, sold a lot on Facebook Marketplace. I've been on eBay, I think, for 15 years now. So literally since I activated my account when I was 16 years old and started selling stuff. So it's a fun hobby that I have. And so I kind of started taking it a little bit more seriously. Sales are very interesting though, man. Like there's a lot of similarities to the real estate market, because sales you can have like this massive spike. It stays consistent, and all of a sudden the bottom drops out and like nobody's buying sneakers. And you would think like during the holidays, everybody's buying sneakers, and like it was kind of low this season. So it's just, there's a lot of similarities, but it's a lot of fun for me, you know?
Yeah, that's cool. I'm gonna ask you a question. I'm not going to ask you who the GOAT is, because I know you're going to go with Jordan. Give me top three reasons why Michael Jordan's the GOAT over LeBron.
Okay, so this is hilarious. LeBron is my favorite player of all time.
Oh.
By far.
Okay, well, I guess you were young when Jordan. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
So here's the thing, though. I do believe that Michael Jordan is the greatest player of all time. I think that LeBron James has the greatest career and is the greatest ambassador of the NBA. Or basketball in general, of all time. But I think that, like, you know, two different eras, completely different. Everybody talks about, like, well, LeBron couldn't survive in the 90s because he's always getting beat up and, you know, he's falling and all. But it's two different eras. And back then in the 90s and the 80s, you can make an argument, like, was that really defense?
Right.
Because it's just, like, it's not like it was a crossover between wrestling and basketball. It's just, like, and nowadays they don't really play defense, so it's just such a hard argument. So I always just say, just from a mentality standpoint, a lot of that's where it's coming from. Like I would even go as far as to say, as like, if you're having that same argument, that Kobe probably had as an individual basketball player is greater than LeBron.
Right.
LeBron has the greatest career, in my opinion. I'll detach this argument just because, like, I'm a Bulls fan. See the hat.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody always says the default answer to MJ being the GOAT is, well, he has six rings.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me debunk this for you. Yeah. Did you know that there's like, I don't know how many players exactly, but there's at least like 8 or 9 players that have more rings than MJ?
More
and
than
Bill
MJ.
Russell has how many? 12, 11, yeah. Something like that. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So if we're using that as an argument, then Bill Russell's obviously the greatest player of all time. So let's back that off. Like, as a player, we'll talk about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's my argument.
No, I like it. I'm not going to debate you on it. So I was, you know, when Jordan was making his run, I was from like 10 years old to, you know, my early teens. And it was, you know, he is the greatest thing on earth to this day in my mind, you know. Yeah. So, and LeBron could win 30 championships and I'm still going to be on Team Jordan. You know, that's just the mindset, and that's just how it goes. So.
Yep. Yep.
Yep.
Just as a career, it's just like, there's so many different angles you could take on it, and right. Well, you know,
right. Cool. Well, Josh, Man, I really appreciate this. You've brought a lot of value to the folks today, to me. You bring a lot of value to me. Again, this is, you know, it's cool having you on the podcast, and now I'm going to turn over to you to edit. So you're going to make yourself look as good as you can possibly look on this one. So, yep. But no, I appreciate you coming on here, man. I love what you're doing. I'm going to ask you one kind of finishing question. What is the next? And I'll preface this with, I have a hard time visualizing like beyond 5 years out, but what's your vision with what you're doing now? Do you have anything new on the horizon that you're thinking about implementing or vertically integrating with anything? Like, where are you and what's the vision?
Yeah. You and I have a lot of similarities. I have a really hard time. Like I do, I run through, it's not called EOS, but there's a similar system that I run through when I'm, you know, implementing some business systems and processes in my business and running our quarterly meetings, and we get to like the 5 and 10 year part. Like, I'm like, no, nah, I'm good.
I can't do it. Yeah, I can't do it. I've never been able to do it. You know.
Yeah, and I'm a vision. On paper, I'm a visionary too, but I have a hard time seeing that far out. So, great question. But I would say, like, within the next year or so, at least within the next 8 to 12 months, the next phase of evolution for me is going deeper into consulting. So, doing a lot more. And I love and enjoy helping people. I think it's like a bad kind of connotation to say like I love talking and speaking, but I truly do. So one of the things that I do with people that I'm going to be ramping up a lot is I actually set full-blown like digital marketing, social media content strategies with people. And I'll spend a whole like 8-hour day with them implementing that, getting them, you know, processes kind of built out, systems built out, set the proper expectations, set the proper directions, hire personnel. Like I'm working with a guy right now who we finally just hired a video editor for him to do their social media. Going to be in-house. I train that person and then plug them into all the processes and systems. So that's kind of where I'm leaning into. I very much enjoy that part of what I do, because I do that with clients too, even with you. Like I do, it doesn't feel like consulting, but I do a lot of like, hey, here's what's going on. Here's some feedback I have for you. If you need help with anything, like I got you guys set up in Riverside and with the tech and stuff like that. So that's a lot of what I love to do. And I think it's say that would be the next evolution to me as a person and in the business.
Right. And I think, I'm speaking to, I know a lot of folks listen to this podcast or in similar stages, I guess, with their business that I am or with their own podcast. But, and I'll just encourage folks to connect with you because the barrier, and by barrier, I mean cost for your services, is not that much for what you're delivering and what you free up for me and bandwidth that not have to think about these things. And Tim on my team, we don't have to think about these things anymore beyond recording them, letting you know when they're there. And, you know, my biggest struggle is just staying ahead with everything. So you guys have the content to manage, but it's not that costly. And, you know, for us, you're just handling the podcast, but you offer all kinds of different services and stuff like that. So I would just encourage folks to reach out to you. And what's your preferred method of contact?
Yeah, so you could send me an email, josh@colormedia.com, C-U-L-L-E-R, josh@colormedia.com. Or you can just look me up on Facebook or Instagram, Josh Color. I am the only verified Josh Color, and that's not a common name, so I should pop up immediately. Just find me on either of those platforms. Send me a direct message. I am pretty easy to find. I'm very responsive, so send me a direct message, say that Jason sent you from the podcast, and happy to connect with anybody that's listening to the show right now.
For sure. Yep. And if nothing else, just go follow Josh and we'll link all your social media stuff. But go follow Josh and do like I did. Watch him for a couple months if you need to. I mean, he is who you've heard today. That's who he consistently is. To give a little commercial about it, we have a lot of services we have to implement, like on our, not the podcast, but in our business. And Josh is about the easiest service provider to deal with. It's very like, what do you need, Josh? I need this, Jason. Boom, boom, boom. We're back and forth. And it's very simple and it has a very good team. And like early on, you know, you were getting to know my style. I was getting to know y'all's style, so that we had to iron out some wrinkles, but it happened very quickly. And now, I mean, we barely have to talk about the job you're doing because we're in a groove now. So I would encourage everybody to check it out. Check Josh out. Josh, I appreciate your time. Appreciate you coming on Burning the Ships and spending some time with us, my man.
Yeah, I very much enjoyed it, man. Great questions, great interview, and I'm honored to be on the show for sure.
All right. Take care.
You too.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Burning the Ships. I want to give a special thanks to our sponsor, 608B Capital, helping real estate investors secure fast, reliable funding to fuel their boldest moves. If you're ready to take your investing to the next level, visit 608bcapital.com to learn more. If you found value in today's episode, please take a moment to rate and review the podcast. Your feedback not only helps us improve, but it also helps us reach more people who are ready to burn the ships and commit fully to their goals. And don't forget to share the episode with someone who needs that extra push to take bold action. I'll leave you with this. Burning the ships isn't just about removing the option to retreat. It's about unlocking the courage to charge forward. No matter the odds, the past is behind you and the future is yours to conquer. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you next time on Burning the Ships.